Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where you, the investor, get to listen as Chris Perry grills the best and the brightest in the corporate sector to help you find out who's the wheat and who's the chaff. Listen in.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
One of our competitors is Cepheid. That came out of Livermore Labs. It's a company that just got acquired for $5 billion. By Danaher in November. Jack Regan, who is the CEO of our company, also started his career at Livermore Labs. He left there to go to a company called Quantalife. Quantalife was obviously as well a Livermore spinoff. That sold for $162 million 18 months later to a company called Bio-Rad, which then licensed the Livermore technology. And Bio-Rad is a $6.5 billion company that Jack just left to join this company as CEO, which is a huge statement, and he's moved his family from San Fran to Boston. So the origins of it are quite strong and important because of the success, and they've had an amazing track record. As a result of Jack's connections and being so well-respected, he's also having a guy from Livermore on our board. A lot of times in public companies, people don't really give enough credit to the people who are there, and you know, a lot of people use the old horse and jockey comment where you're betting the jockey, not the horse. And he's got a board that he's put together that's incredibly impactful and very reputable and very impressive. So we have an individual named Tom Slezak, who is at Livermore Labs, who sits on our board. That doesn't happen very often. He's the founder of the BioWatch program, which is the largest anti-terrorism initiative in U.S. history for biothreats. We also have an individual called Dr. Eric Olson, who is a retired lieutenant colonel, who's most foremost expert on pathogen detection systems in the world. He's done 1.2 million pathogen detection tests. Also on the board, we have a member from Boston Scientific, etc. So a very strong board. Jack, as I said, was someone who started his career at Livermore, went to a company called Quantalife, which sold to Bio-Rad and just left Bio-Rad. I myself was a senior vice president at Canaccord for 15 years, which is Canada's largest independent brokerage firm. I left there to join a company called Caden. We sold Caden 18 months later to Agnico for $200 million in a very tough market, and then moved on to a company called Orin, which we've grown to a $250 million market cap. And this is actually right now the largest excavation company in the world. So, again, our history and being part of a lot of these really successful stories is being able to continue that pattern. So Lexigene is something that's been successful to date. We raised the money essentially ourselves and have self-funded this to date. So I think maybe the next point of fluid motion in the story is the origins of this project are also very important of what it was built for. So if you remember in 9/11, you had some terrorist attacks, obviously, and well, everyone remembers that part. Mm-hmm. But not everyone remembers there was a big anthrax scare right after the attacks, where a couple senators were mailed anthrax, and there was definitely an issue. So this machine was engineered and developed to prevent for anthrax attacks. And so essentially the machine sat in the corner of Grand Central Station, Boston Central. It was at the Olympics. And what it did was fully autonomously sat in the corner of a room and processed about 56,000 square feet of air every 2.5 minutes, and would let those people know, say, Jack, if there was any anthrax in the air. If so, they would shut down those facilities immediately with no other tests needed. So that's how much confidence they had in the system. Wow. Second generation of it added a few more pathogens. The third generation was actually used in the National Institute of Health for a flu pandemic. The machine's very adaptable. But in those first three, Jack always felt that there was more that the machine could do. The third generation, he was in high demand from doctors that they wanted him to commercialize it. He still didn't feel it was there. So years later, he came back to this project. And the fourth generation is now one that's very, very strong. It's something that has a lot of advantages over the other ones and features, such as it can do six passages at a time and six samples at a time, as opposed to one or two that it did before, and things like that that aren't big enough changes that they're not going to work, because we're very confident it's going to work. And we've actually mitigated virtually all the risk of the machine working or not working, and we're very confident it's going to be done by November, which is our goal. And again, the point of that is a few changes that make the machine even better. It's smaller. It's fully autonomous, which is very important, because you know, a layperson like me who doesn't understand science as much as someone else does, can essentially draw a sample, stick it in the machine, hit a button, and an hour later you get your results. And that just doesn't exist right now in that autonomous fashion and this open access that we have, which allows you to keep your sample on site. You don't have to ship it to the lab. You don't have to send it away. So originally when we started this project, we talked about the low-hanging fruit out there, which is your food safety, vet diagnostics, aquaculture, municipal water testing, for example. And because we have a flow-through system, you can essentially flow water through at a higher rate than any of the other machines and capture enough of a sample size that you can give a proper diagnostics of that service. So, you know, when we look at our competitors, we're a lot stronger that way. The largest sample size out there to date is Cepheid, which I illustrated before, that was sold for $5 billion. They can do 5 milliliters, we can do 50 milliliters. So, you know, sample size is important in this industry. If you have a pathogen in a small quantity in a small sample, you might miss it. So that's why it's applicable to these industries. So when we first started the company, obviously you look at FDA, we have a lot of advantages on the clinical side that we can use, but that's a very long process. We are building this to sell this machine and sell the company, which I'll get to in a sec. But I think the important part when we look at these things is you have these competitive advantages that really change the system. And when we started looking at food safety, it wasn't the issue it is now. It was pre-Chipotle. And what we figure is there's this low-hanging fruit, which is about $18 billion in industry value right now, that is not really well served, and we could definitely help. So when it comes to food safety, if you look at the lettuce, Chipotle had four different scares, four different locations, salmonella, norovirus, E. coli. With our machines, that definitely changes the situation. You collect it at site, you process it an hour later, you ship it to wherever you're shipping to it. Right now, industry standard, if you collect the sample, you ship it away. Up to 2 to 3 days later, you get the results back. You have to put the lettuce in a holding facility. You have to have it quality controlled. It's already starting to perish, which is an issue with quality. And most companies right now or before were essentially saying, just send it to the store. We just can't wait right now. So if you can imagine doing that in an hour, it really protects in so many ways in terms of safety, quality, and time. And that's something that went after. Now, fortuitously enough for us, in that period, the FDA has now mandated food safety testing. So we now have this very fortuitous situation and development where the FDA is saying now you have to test your food. We're not going to be reactionary or being proactive. You have to test your food. We will make calls to your store. You know, this is something that has to happen. You have to take records. And again, the current standard is you need a licensed technician to process all these samples. With us, you don't. But with that, you have human error. You have, for lack of a better word, some laziness where maybe you don't write down all the data that time. You're going to do it later and you forget what may be. Ours is all done on a iPad type device that you just hit a button and it's all sitting right there. So very, very, very huge opportunity for us. That industry right now is around $6 billion. We think that's going to balloon with this new testing. And again, our competitors just can't do what we can do right now, and it would take them quite some time to get down there. So the veterinary landscape, again, it's $7 billion. It's even bigger than food safety. If you can imagine bringing your pet into a pet hospital, again, current standards is 2 to 3 days. We just had a friend of mine took their dog in, misdiagnosed. The dog passed, unfortunately. A lot of that happens. It's very, very common, and it shouldn't be. But it is that process. You know, you prescribe, say, you think the dog has pancreatitis, but it really doesn't. Say it has a pathogen or an antibody resistance. We can tell that in an hour. And if you can imagine the vet clinic, you know, it's the same cost of the vet clinic, if not less, because it's on site. If you can imagine, you can pass that cost on to the customer, though, saying, here's our quality test that takes 2 days. Here's the price. Here's what it is in an hour. And I think most people, if not all people, are going to say, you know, I want that hour test. I want to make sure it's proper. So many different applications that if you don't penetrate one industry fully, there's other ones that are very important. Aquaculture is a huge one. They're in huge turmoil right now. What do we do? We know that people are very skeptical of farm food. We're having all these issues. We just don't know how to test properly. It's driving us crazy. And it's something that we really need to change. And that's something that's huge. Border control's a big issue right now. There's trucks lined up down the highway. All food coming in from out of the country right now has to be tested. Well, you know, they're sitting there for 2-3 days. It's not good enough, and that's something that we address. So that's our low-hanging fruit. On the clinical market, we definitely have advantages there. But one of the things that I like about this company, much like my mining companies or our mining companies that we ran before, is we are building it to sell it. We realize in this industry, like the mining industry, you grow by acquisition of the companies that are taking the risks at the beginning, and then you can use those facilities for their sales processes, their call centers, their manufacturing plants. So if you look at, say you get a client in Holland as a company that's based out of Boston, which we are, that's a hard thing to service. It's a hard thing to put together. But if you have a company like, say, Thermo Fisher or Pyrad, and they acquire us, you can use their facilities, their salespeople, and really leverage against that and really grow quickly. And if you look at a lot of the takeovers from Livermore, you know, the companies balloon as soon as they're taken over from the major. So one of the things as an investment advisor or stockbroker for all those years is I realized with a lot of clients, it's very nice to have an exit plan. You know, I'm in this for 8 years, I'm in this for 6 years, I'm in this for five. Companies, I found that a lot of investors sort of have that 2 to 3 year window before they get bored of the story and you potentially have to replace. But we're pretty confident that come November when this machine is built, we're pretty confident that we would get a takeover offer, which won't be enough, but it'll be something that we consider, which will be a nice validation for shareholders. Again, we can never... you can never count on that, but we do think there's a potential there, and a high potential. But the reality of this product is most comparables in this industry for things like this are around $400 million US in terms of takeovers. We're trading at a $20 million market cap right now solely on the fact that we've really, really taken our time on this. We've really placed the stock well. It was all to people who liked the story and were in for the long run. So if you think of that potential, we'll be in commercialization by the end of next year. And usually in these situations, 6 months before or after commercialization, they're usually an exit if you are looking at selling it. So it's something that we're looking at this from an investor's point of view as well, which is what you have to do with a public company. You know, what's my upside? Where's my exit? And where is the company at? And we're months away from this machine being completed. We're less than a month away from being able to potentially say that there's zero risk in the machine. Based on all these tests that we've done, and more importantly, and on the stock side, is we have come, I would say probably around November, August, September, November, somewhere in that realm. We're filming on June 28th for a company called Innovations TV. We were hand selected by that show, which airs on Fox TV. It's not a pay for service. I've been asked by tons of people how they get on the show, and it's by invitation only. So they're doing something on food safety. They found us through research. The last five companies they profiled are all multi-billion dollar companies like Caterpillar, Bombardier, Dow Seeds, which is a division of Dow Chemicals. And essentially you get this program that is aired to 85 million people worldwide. You also get a 30-second commercial spot, which goes on CNN, Headline News. It goes on Discovery Channel, Travel Network, etc., which will be seen by about another 200 million people. And it goes to 4,500 local TV shows, etc. So that's a huge... exposure point for us, which I think is important because it validates what we're doing, and it really does allow us to have a huge amount of eyes on the story, which is very important with stock. So very excited about that and very excited about where we're on. And it's just something that, you know, when I look at companies, and I always have, is just, you know, who's running it, what's the history, what's the share structure like. Our share structure is very good. We own almost 50% of the company. We've self-funded it essentially to date. Other investors are very strong partners of mine that I've worked with for years and under all our successful companies. Then you look at the product. Is it strong? Is it something that does change? Does it have those aspects that just make it absolutely a necessity for people to consider? And the last one is there an exit plan? And we do have an exit plan, and that's something that, again, as an investor, you look at things like this and say, you know, that checks all my boxes for something to take a look at more seriously.
Sure. So you've got a story here that's interesting, in as much as we, I guess, in the Canadian public market space, saw Patriot One Technologies take off, which is detecting metals in and around itself. And got Tom Ridge, the former head of Homeland Security, and that thing's worth double what you're worth.
Yes.
The applications for it, much smaller, I would think, unless we're going to put, you know, metal detectors in every room, than somebody who's looking for pathogens in food or around animals, or, you know, in places, in a similar place to what Patriot One would be doing, in places where large numbers of people are congregating. So you look like, just from that comparable alone, you're undervalued. The question, I guess, is, we, you know, how ready is the technology? Is it proven? Does it definitely work? Are you just in a place where you're perfecting it now? You're making it better?
I mean, it's there's three prototypes out already, which work and have worked for years, and they have been put through the channels, and everything works there. There are changes to this one, but they're very attainable changes and things that we're not worried about.
Commercialization sort of thing, like making it more compact, making it cheaper to make.
Yeah, you kind of go through. I mean, there's a camera in there that we use, and in time you might find a different camera that's smaller, maybe a bit more reasonable in price, and you do work on that. And I think, you know, it's something that come November you're going to be able to come to our facility in Boston. You're going to be able to bring your own samples, let's just say your Chipotle, and bring your own sample, run five at a time. In an hour, we're going to tell you which one's tainted and which one's not.
Right.
And that's very close. In the meantime, going up to that is very shortly here, we'll have the confirmation that there is no risk left in the machine. Everything that we thought could go wrong or could potentially be an issue is not an issue anymore. And we're quite comfortable to say that very shortly, that there is no issue. So I think maybe the best illustration is there are three units working. They had no issues. This is very similar to those machines. There's some small changes that we've made, but improvements, and that's something we're definitely not concerned about. So when it comes down to when can you see the machine work, that's November. But until then, we have a lot of other things coming to really say that there's no risk in this machine. At some point very shortly, it's basically a science project of taking everything that we've done and putting it into the box. And it's more or less a science project at this point, and it's not one of these things that something can go wrong majorly that makes this machine have any issues that people are going to be concerned about.
So financial side of it would be important. What are they going to come out at a general idea of price point?
We figure the cost about $55 to make. If you want to make your margins on it, you could sell it for $100. It was interesting at Quantalife when Jack was there. They were selling the machines for about $45,000. When Bio-Rad bought them, they upped the price to about $95,000 and said this is a superior product. It's a VIP product. So we're actually going to charge more for the product. But the important part for our machine is the real big revenue aspects is the razor blade model, where you essentially have a filter that you can only use, and it is a filter you can only use with our machine. It's barcoded. It's something that obviously doesn't work with other machines because it's a much different process. And we have all these things called our reagents and such in the machine, whereas other ones need to be applied by a scientist. So what happens with a lot of the other machines is the expensive part is that process, where ours isn't. Our filters are very cheap to manufacture. They're about $250 to manufacture, and you can sell them for, you know, there'll be a magic number there, but the industry average is about $50 per test. That said, if you use one of our competitors, you have to do multiple tests for multiple pathogens, which you don't have to here, and they can't do many samples at once. So this sample is essentially, if you look at it, you take a sample of water, you stick it in the machine, you hit a button, everything goes in the garbage, buy another filter, stick it in the machine, etc. So that razor blade model is very important. Our margins on it are in the high 90s, which is incredible, and that will allow us to discount the filters if we have to get full penetration into a market. It allows us that leeway to play with the cost of the filter, which is our big revenue model, not necessarily the machines, as our revenue model. And what that does do is we will have the best margins in the business, and biotech is all about a race to the bottom in terms of price. So if you keep driving your price down to get penetration in the industry, then obviously your margins are suffering. And we have such huge margins that for a potential acquirer, you look at that and say, if you had a place like, say, Chipotle, and you even sold the machines for cost, which you most likely wouldn't do, but let's just use that analogy.
Sure.
Your big revenue model is if they order 500,000 filters. I mean, your profit margins are massive on that. So the machine is still reasonable enough, though, where you could have it on. Chipotle's very big supporter of small independent farms. So if you had a small farm in, say, Salinas, where 89% of the lettuce comes from, and that individual wanted to test their lettuce because they still wanted to deal with Chipotle. And one of the worries I have about Chipotle is, are they sourcing food now from people that are using chemicals, because they're all about being fully organic, because now you've had a food scare. You can't afford to ever happen that again. It's a $6 billion loss to them.
Sure.
In market cap. You want that small independent farmer to say, "Hey, I want to test too, but I'm not in the position to hire a licensed technician and have these machines that cost all this money, and a process that just doesn't work as well as it should. Our machines are still reasonable enough that that's a cost that someone's going to look at and say, I'm absolutely comfortable with that because I can still sell to Chipotle or whoever it may be that's buying that product." And our hope is that it really results in an industry that can still serve that food that is organic and not using chemicals to counter a lot of the potential pathogens, because that's obviously the foundation for Chipotle and many other companies. And the direction these days is we want to eat healthier, we want to eat better, but obviously we want it to be safe. And you wonder, when you're a corporation, when do you sacrifice one for the other to make sure that you don't have those scares?
For sure. So does the FDA need to approve this, or are you able to work without that?
No, you can work without them. So, I mean, they're going to oversee these processes in the food safety industry. They're going to test and look at your machine more often. They used to do it every 10 years. They're going to do it every 2.5.
Okay.
They are going to be way more proactive, but you do not need their approval on this side. And why we call these industries low-hanging fruit is for that reason. Mm-hmm. The clinical market, which is a $54 billion industry, and we could be very competitive there, is a much more long, arduous process. It takes a huge amount of patience as well, because it's a very frustrating process. And sure, it's something that, like the mining companies who can get permits in certain countries and the small companies can, I like to equate it to that, where they're just better at it, they're more versed in it, they have the connections there, they have that ability to do it that, you know, we do, but it's going to take a lot of time. And we just feel that right now these low-hanging fruit, quote-unquote, industries that we're looking at present a massive opportunity. And especially the vet diagnostics as well is something that's very similar to diagnostics for humans. It's actually identical. The pathogens work the same way. If you do have a big amount of success in there, which we feel we will, it does translate very well into the clinical side. So it's something that without actually being in the clinical market for humans, which is the plan in the future, mm-hmm. You can say it works in the vet diagnostics industry. So obviously it works on this side as well.
So obviously the technology itself is important in as much as this is one application for it, but there are obviously other applications. I'm thinking, you know, along the lines of, you know, being able to detect issues within the human body in a doctor's office, or, you know, security obviously is an issue there. Yeah. Is there a potential for this thing to be brought down in size to a point where conceivably a restaurant could have a smaller version that they do their own checking on, or even beyond that, a household version?
You could, potentially. I mean, the tough part there is most of the issues in a restaurant come from hand washing, and it's mostly on the surface. So you literally have to swab the entire surface, and you have to swab everyone's hands. It's more typically and more beneficial on the manufacturing side.
Okay.
And on the restaurant level, I mean, I know we've talked to many companies, it's a policy that they have there to try to prevent that. Chipotle is a very good example where you had four different viruses at four different locations, which mm-hmm. really, it ruled out that it was the restaurant's fault, the individual restaurant, and that was very important. And when there was one case and it was E. coli, you go, I wonder if that was an employee. Mm-hmm. The fact that it was four different ones was very good for us, not so good for Chipotle, which is unfortunate, but it was four different locations. They identified it was the lettuce. That's the issue. On the individual restaurant side, it becomes a very difficult process to do. Mm-hmm. Not outside of a potential one day, but it's definitely one that it's probably on an adoption side, unlikely based on the fact that you're still going to have the issue of hand washing, and that's the biggest issue right now.
Mm-hmm. So what's the situation in terms of the company itself? Where do you sit in terms of cash, in terms of burn? Do you need to raise money to get to the point where commercialization is ready?
Yeah, so we have about $3 million right now. Our last raise, we took $2 million. We had orders for 8.5 without even really opening it up. And we did only take what was necessary and what was reasonable and what we needed, based on the fact that if you look at a lot of companies, and I'll use our mining company as an example, our company, Caden, after 4 years, had 55 million shares out. And that enabled a 379 takeover. If you have 200 million shares out, that was a dollar. So a very big difference. And one of the things we do really well in our group of companies is you look at these things and say, okay, share structure is imperative. It's more important at times, if not more important for sure, than everything else out there, based on the fact that if your share structure suffers, your stock suffers, it's hard to raise money, it's hard to get any traction on the stock, etc. So we raised the absolute bare minimum. We closed 2 and we could take 8, and that takes us to January. Our goal in September, October, November, December is to raise $20 million to go into commercialization. We really only need around 10, but if you're going to draw really strong employees, say a head of sales, for example, you definitely need to have 2-3 years of operating capital. Otherwise, it scares them too much to leave, like Jack did, a $6 billion company to move over. So we're confident we'll get that done. We have enough cash till then. It's not something we're worried about. We're very good at raising money. And it's something that we're very particular about as well. I want to do it much higher. I don't want to do it here. The last round, same thing. It's just about protecting that structure at all times. Caden and Oren, we had the same conversations all the time. Mm-hmm. Every time we were looking at money, do we need it? How much do we need? How high can we do the price? We got offered money all the time that we turned down. And I think that's something that's really impressive, which a lot of companies don't do. And what it does in the end of the day is you have good share structure, you have a good stock. In any market, you can prosper. And that's something that we're definitely protective of.
So you're in a situation where with commercialization headed towards the end of the year, what are the news catalysts going to be for the next 6 months until that point?
So we have, you know, a bunch of sort of PR, IR programs starting down in the States. I think the easiest way to look at it is we realize this is a story in the U.S. and that just really resonates. And you go down there and the market caps are incredible. The financings are incredible. The valuations are incredible. And really where this mass appeal is going to be in the U.S. based on population, obviously, and a different investing philosophy. So our story is going to become very evident in the U.S. We have a lot of stuff we're working on that I can't really talk about right now, but just on the independent third-party reporting. We've got this Fox News program, which is months away, which is something that I think any public company would dream about. And we have a bunch of catalysts in the way of where we are with the machine, as I alluded to before, where I think all the risks are going to be mitigated. And really, we're just starting to get the story out there and get it out where people know a lot about it. We've sat with the ex-head microcap biotech individual from Lehman Brothers before it was done. He said, you know, in the States, this is a $100 million story all day long. So sure. Really, we just started to get the story out. We've been only to 2 conferences. We have about 10 in the next 3 months. We're off to Italy for the World Diagnostics Veterinarian Conference in 4 days. We've been to New York a couple times for some conferences. We're really, really fresh in terms of a story and haven't got it there. So you're going to see a lot of very interesting stories on us and people starting to cover us in the next 3 to 6 months. Like I said, in November, the device is done. We'll have potential acquirers taking a look at it. There's a possibility for a takeover there, which will be much higher than what we're trading at. And again, in lots of different publications, we have trade publications coming. The origination of this product is potentially writing a letter just authorizing and explaining their excitement in it, etc. So you have a lot of story building coming and essentially a story that really hasn't been told to many people is going to change really quick here.
So I guess the risks at this point are that you either struggle to raise the money for commercialization, which seems unlikely, and or that the final draft of the equipment doesn't work, which would also seem unlikely since the last 3 did. Do you see any other potentials there for problems? Like every time a Chipotle comes up and makes people sick, you're dealing with billions of dollars off their market cap. It strikes me that buying a handful of your machines at the price that you're touting them at, it doesn't not make sense, as is the case with your basically your printer model of making the money on the refillables rather than the machine itself.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've been doing this a long time, and it's rare where you see something that you just feel like it's you know, the inevitable seems so sure here. And I know, you know, we've all been in the business a long time, and anything can happen. But if you really, really dig down and take a look at every aspect of this opportunity, I just don't see anything that is a big risk. I mean, maybe the only risk I can think about is if the big boards collapse and investors like in 08 when I was a broker said, I don't want anything other than the NYSE for a while and I'm just so scared of everything. you know, that could be a potential issue for us and for everyone, really. But other than that, you know, I don't see anything on the micro side, on the macro cap side, and the macro side of analytics. I can see the markets being an issue, but really, right now, you have something that's just in such dire need, and something that addresses that need so well, and something that's been done already before, and a team that's just, you know, so intelligent. It's hard to relay that, but you know, I consider myself somewhat smart until you meet these people that are working on this thing, and you feel like you need to go back to school for 20 years. But you know, it's very, very impressive, and it's something that we've shown it to so many people. We had someone that was actually involved in Cepheid that was on a call one day to pick us apart and had no interest in the company really, and was there to just pick holes and find things wrong with it, and ended up being an investor and part of the company. We've had so many experts on both sides look at this and walk away saying, this is just unbelievable what you're working on. So I really don't see many risks. And again, the only risk in investing is there's certain factors you can't control, but the stuff that we can control, we're very comfortable with you know, being able to say that those risks are mitigated.
So a nice early biotech story that that doesn't look like it has a whole lot of dark spots. It's a nice change. There's a lot of biotech stories out there where the big risk is that someone at the FDA gets up and has a bad day and decides to reject your application, and you've lost hundreds of millions of dollars and back 3 to 5 years. But you don't have that impediment here unless you decide to really go max large on what you're doing.
For sure. No question. I mean, and you can see we also have the shareholder base, which again, I go back to that, that's very strong, that has the capabilities to write checks and to hold forever. And I learned from a good friend of mine that I worked with the Canaccord for years. You know, if people in your deal don't need the money, then they're the best people possible. So, I mean, we have this ability to weather any market, and it was the same with our previous companies. And we have the ability to keep buying. I've bought probably 150,000 last couple of weeks, which no one ever does. We did that a lot at Caden and at Orin.
Aren't you supposed to give yourself stock options instead? Isn't that the way everyone does it?
Well, that's the way everyone else does it, yeah.
So, roll it out for free?
Well, this is the thing, right? I mean, even on our options, we have 2 million out right now. And we could have right now 5 million out. We're saving it for more important people. So it's something where there's all these little things that I think are really important that sometimes get missed. But it really builds a story of, you know, small option package, small salaries. They keep buying their own stock. I mean, that's just stuff that doesn't happen enough these days. And, you know, we're in there with the shareholders. And this is something we take really seriously. And again, Jack's moved from San Fran to Boston to run this company and left a $6.5 billion company. I left one of the most successful mining exploration companies in the world right now. They actually have the largest exploration program in the world to run this company. And we have huge confidence in what we're doing.
So I've got a few questions in the chat there. One is, doesn't the FDA have to accept the RAIDD tip-based tests, specifically ones from LXG's machine?
No, they don't. No, they don't need to accept it, no.
And the other one was, what is the actual means with which the machine detects the pathogens?
How does it actually work?
Yeah.
In a simple sense, essentially what it will do is it draws in a liquid and the particulates, so your virus and your bacteria. And it runs it through the machine, which gets captured in a filter. And when that happens, you then bust it open, and you bust open the DNA, and it does that by, it's called the lysis buffer, but it basically busts open the DNA and separates everything so that the next step is it magnifies that DNA. So essentially, if you had Listeria in the sample, it goes through a set of processes that purifies it, but also amplifies that DNA. And what that does is now you have these samples where if you're going for 2-3 days, they're basically growing that culture so that they can see that magnification, that purification of what you're looking for, maybe what you're not working for. Mm-hmm. In our machine, it does it all inside the filter, inside the device. And then it's divided and combined with the last remaining components, and then you do genetic amplification. So in that sense, we do 22 gene amplification processes and gene sequences, which you could do more, and 22 PCR tests, which have been around for a long time but not in this facility. And then it goes through a thermocycler where the solutions are heated and cooled, and that then again amplifies and targets the gene sequences that you have. This all happens in an exponential fashion too, so you can run six different tests at six different times, and you don't have to do it in sequence. And that when that happens, the gene then gets amplified. The reaction emits lights of different colors, which is caught by a camera, and that tells you whether those passes are in there or not. So essentially, you've got a system where collect the sample, put it in the machine, it draws it in, it separates it, it busts it open so that that sequence is exposed. It magnifies it, amplifies it, and then it analyzes it and tells you what you have. So that's a very complicated system, made sound simple, but it's essentially that's the process of what our machine does.
It's another question here is, how does it amplify and target the gene sequences? We might be getting into the IP here a little bit deep.
Yeah, no, it's through your PCR test, and that PCR is something that you can look up. It's a process that's been around for a long time, but it's the patented way that you do amplify and break apart those genes. So it's a system that's been around for a while, but the thing that's different about ours is everything is done within the machine, including the setup of processing the filter well enough and setting it up properly where it dips into these different reagents, as opposed to a technician loading them on. And then that does everything in the machine, which allows you to keep that sample in that machine and get that sample. And that's where we don't have to grow the bacteria and process it, because it's something that we can do inside the machine.
And you can target any pathogen. So if someone's got a specific interest in it, or if there's an outbreak of a specific disease, you guys can zero in on it.
And that's important too. We actually are working with a very successful foundation that may or may not happen, but there is a pandemic aspect to this too, where our machine is very adaptable. And the second you have a DNA strand, and we've talked to the military about this too, if you have a new DNA strand in a new pandemic, for instance, the typical machine and the competitors have to engineer a filter for that, and you have to engineer tests for that, etc. But because all of ours is inside the machine, and essentially controlled by a very smart computer, you can input that DNA strand at any time into your machine. And if you have a pandemic, that machine's ready right away on site that day, essentially, to plug in that strand and say it was for soldiers in Afghanistan. We can start testing right away whether you have that or not. And in pandemic prevention, the first and best avenue is quarantine. Mm-hmm. So if you can imagine five people come in and they say, okay, you have the bird flu, but you're level two, you're fine, but look for these signs. You're level four, you're quarantined, but you have this new pandemic. We're really worried, but you're quarantined as well. There's huge applications for that in many different industries, and military, again, who we have been talking to. We sat with the heads of many organizations that I probably shouldn't illustrate right now. I'm not sure what the clearance is on that, but you look at stuff like that, and it is an applicable thing, and that is something that you don't have to wait for the FDA for obvious reasons. So we have an ex-lieutenant colonel on the board. Again, he's got about a 40-page CV that makes me feel like I've done nothing in my life, but you know, a very impressive person that, if you can imagine an aircraft carrier, if something breaks out in there, how many people get sick? So there are those applications as well that are so widespread that a lot of companies, biotech and anything really, if you have one industry you're pursuing, the problem with that is if that industry doesn't work, now what? Right. And I think the important part with this is there's so many different aspects, because the features of the machine are so strong, we can really expand our breadth. And like I said, we talked to the head of border control. That's something we weren't even thinking about. We've talked to the National Health Organization head, the head of aquaculture for the U.S., all these people who are saying, listen, we need something to change here, and it sounds like what you have is what we're looking for. So, yes, the long answer to that question is, yeah, for pandemic prevention, we don't think there's anything much better than that, and that's something that we are considering based on the fact that it does resonate as well as food safety with a lot of people, if not more sometimes. And if you look at history of human population, is every time that it balloons to a point that's becoming unsustainable, which people feel we are now, you get pandemics that occur, or potentially world wars, unfortunately. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But these are things you have to think about when you got a ballooning population. Could there be a pandemic that happens, and what happens then? So we are really considering advancing this for that as well, and because it does have those applications and those benefits.
Is part of the money that you'll need to raise to commercialize this, it gets you the ability to scale production quickly?
Yeah, that's part of it for sure. No question.
Is the plan to do that in-house or to outsource?
No, we'll do it in horse and house. Right now, Boston Engineering is building a machine, so that's obviously an option. But
okay.
Yeah, you want to do it in-house. You want to get to that point. You want to get your costs down. Again, you look at that acquisition where that company, whoever it may be, and most likely a large company, has that capacity to do it a lot better than we can. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to do it well in the beginning. So part of that going into commercialization is, yeah, we're going to hire probably 20 to 30 people in December, January to really magnify and aggressively build this company out properly. That said, if you're looking at getting your company acquired, you do get it to a point where you look at that major company and you say, that is something where we've got it to that inflection point that we've done an amazing job, but imagine how much better it could be if you had their facilities for manufacturing, their sales team, etc. And obviously we would continue working with the company until then, but like QuantaLife that Jack was with, you look at that for all those metrics. And the interesting part with QuantaLife that we found was the increase in the cost of machines because it is such a skilled product. So again, you're looking at something where you probably didn't think about that at the smaller company, but the larger company says, hey, listen, we can make that happen. And that's something that we think actually appeals more for this device as opposed to one that it cuts the cost. So all very interesting propositions.
When you've got the next version of the machine out, is that the final version of the machine for a while, or is development ongoing?
No, you sort of you develop it along the way. You go into beta, and essentially, if you can imagine, Chipotle would run our machine for about a month and a half is usually how it works, and they would run our machine next to the process they're doing right now, and I think we can all agree what's going to happen very quickly is they're going to say, this is amazing. But you also get feedback and data from that so that you say, okay, well, what can we improve on this? What don't you like about it? And the part about beta testing is getting to that point of, where are we lacking in things? Where are we really progressing? Where are we thriving? And it's something where you adapt it over time. And really in this industry, you adapt it forever. And that's sort of ongoing and something where if you can improve it, you do. And there's usually multiple versions of something based on the fact that you do start to really learn about what you're working with and what you have. But for us, it'll be a process exactly like that in beta testing where we will definitely change the machine. Nothing major, but could be something very small, but nothing major that's going to be an issue.
Excellent. Well, you know what? I've talked to a lot of biotech guys over the last couple of years, and a lot of times, I've actually had experiences with companies that are using pathogen detection technology on people's breath, and know, there's a whole lot of stories out there. And the commercialization side of things often takes long enough that the story goes away in time. This looks like it's something where the commercialization is coming quickly enough that the chances of that coming is very small. I got to say, I think the pitch is great. And the questions that have been thrown at you would have been easy to sort of muddle through them, but you've nailed them all. So I'm going to tell you that my plan tomorrow morning is to pick up some LXG.
Oh, that's fantastic. I appreciate that.
I'd be interested to see what the guys in chat think, but you've quieted them down, which generally means good answers have been afoot.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And we're very accessible, too, and I think that's important. You can sign up on our website. You can email me. Anything we've ever worked on in the past are very accessible. I remember as a broker, and I should have saw the signs, there was an oil and gas company, and I guess I won't say who it is even though I want to, but I remember I had a client who had quite a bit of it, and I said, do you mind if he talks to the president or CEO, because we have some concerns, it's down, we're worried about it, we have a substantial investment, and the IR person told me, he doesn't take calls from investors. And that company eventually went to zero, and that does and did stick with me where we're in this with our shareholders are our partners and we are accessible and I welcome questions. I welcome concerns. I welcome it all. And it's something that unfortunately not all the companies do. And I think that's unfair. So again, anyone watching, listening on a chat page, by all means, good or bad, we're around to answer questions and to engage with shareholders, which is what we, this is why we go public.
The only question we didn't get to our friend Braden in the chat is stompy about it. He's asked on innovations, are you going to meet Ed Begley Jr.?
Yes, of course. He's the future.
And if so, could you ask him to come on this show?
Well, I'll try. I've been offered quite a bit of things lately to try to get people's companies on there. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. It's pretty regimented, and it's really interesting. We were joking that he's going to ride his bike to power the cameras because every morning he does that first toaster. So it's pretty funny. I'm still trying to find my parents were big Shane Elsewhere fans, so I'm going to try to see if they can come and get some autographs or something.
Brayden also wants to get a machine for the office. He doesn't trust the salads at the cafe down the street.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, I know. It's not a bad idea. We can all pitch in.
We'll wait for the desktop version to come out. Thanks for your time, okay. Daryl. I really appreciate it. And we'll check in with you again down the road and see how close you're getting. And okay. Congratulations. Really good
thank
job.
You.
Appreciate
awesome.
It.
Awesome. Much appreciated.
Thanks, man.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Bye.
Hey guys, that was good. You know that you get those when we had LDS the other day, did a really good job and the stock went shooting up the next day. That was one of those interviews, I think, where, you know, when you open up the show, you're like, oh, it's a biotech thing. Those things take forever and it's going to have to go through the FDA and some money has to be raised and we're going to have to wait 3 years and the news will come without any warning. That's not that kind of deal. I can see the use for the machine. The technology appears to actually be functional. There are others out there that are doing it, so that might be the potential downfall is that someone comes along with a machine that does the same thing for less or has a bigger sales force. But I like the fact that they're very open about the fact that they're looking for an exit, that it'll be much better in the hands of a bigger company than what they can make it in a small company having to raise money. I like that the ambitions aren't ridiculous. They're not saying, whoa, it's a $50 billion industry, and if we get 1%, you know, that old bullshit. And the questions regarding the tech, and that's usually where this stuff comes unstuck. If you go and ask the guys at Cannabix, BLO, about the technology in their machine, they're not going to give you so many answers. And one of their companies is BreathTech, which is supposed to detect cancer in your breath. You know, no one's ever been able to show me that actually works yet. So this is something where I think that the real comparable is Patriot One, but I think this has such a much larger use case scenario than the Patriot One technology. Detecting guns is great, detecting bombs is great, but detecting pathogens in food or in bus stations, train stations, stadiums. We just had a terrorist attack last week at an event in Manchester. You know, if this has the terrorist security side that the Patriot One has, which is a $40 million company, and the food side, which Patriot One doesn't have, and it's a $20 million company, then shit, you know, I think that's an interesting deal. The fact that they're not actually doing a culture test, I think, is probably makes this thing a lot quicker. Whether the technology of using different colored lights actually works to detect the pathogens is they say it does. I'll take their word for it at this point. No one's saying it doesn't. And you know, there's going to be situations going forward where we have our water attacked, or someone drops some gas in a subway, or you know, if we have military conflict, then the military uses for this sort of stuff would be most interesting. You can see there in the presentation, vet diagnostics, water testing, aquaculture. I live in Steveston in Richmond, BC, and there's a lot of seafood there, as we saw with the seal dragging a young girl into the water the other day. But you know, quite often I'll be looking at the seafood that comes off the dock and thinking, ugh. You know, I imagine that this sort of technology 5-10 years down the line, Brayden asked if it has an app for a cell phone, I can picture a place where maybe that actually comes to bear. So they've got in their presentation here a whole bunch of references for anything that they're making claims to: food safety, vet diagnostics, water culture. So that's a good thing to see as well. Lexigene, you know, completely under my, there's Ed Begley. Hello, Ed. Completely off my radar, and I think probably off a lot of people's radar. If we look at the share price on it just in the last month, it's been a bit of a fall off, but only a bit of a fall off. Summertime has maybe something to do with that, but over the last 6 months, like, that's a big jump. So thanks to Etienne Moshevich, who's a player in Vancouver and sometimes calls me up early in the morning because he starts early in the morning and says, you got to see this company. And when he does, I usually open the door to them because he's really sent me stuff that hasn't been interesting. Either a turnaround story that's just about to roll up, or in this case, a situation where it's just undervalued. This is one of those things where if a Fabrice Taylor suddenly came out and said he was in, I think this thing would be a $3 stock from what we just heard. I really liked that interview, and I think we get Braden to the point where he says, okay, thank you. Then you've not only answered questions, but you've answered them to the point where he can't find anything more to prickle. So LXG, interesting. As I said, tomorrow morning I'm going to get on my Qtrade account and I'm going to pick some up and give it a bit of a watch over the next few months. It may be, well be, that with commercialization coming in November, obviously they said he was going to raise $20 million, that might give the share price a bit of a rockin'. So I wouldn't necessarily put the mortgage on it, but definitely stick it on the watch list and see what you can see. Braden, I'm sure you can find plenty if you keep looking. But you know what? I think the challenge on something like this is if it takes a deep dig to find anything, because every company on the junior markets has something that they'd rather you don't look too deep at. But if it takes a really deep dig, then that's a good sign, at least at the start of things. And the fact that they're willing to answer any question, and there certainly wasn't any questions there that were dodged or that needed to be dodged, that's a good sign. If you're a first-time investor or you're an early investor and you've been all through cannabis and, you know, mining's a little bit too much for you because there's a lot of inside baseball terminology, biotech that doesn't require an FDA approval is a nice middle ground there. It's, food safety, I think, is a really important thing. It's going to only get more important. Everything in my fridge right now has been processed many, many states away, which isn't my preferred way to eat, but you know, it's what's available a lot of the time. And you're really trusting that someone somewhere didn't wash their hands after they went poo-poo and didn't rub their dirty, filthy hands all over my lettuce. So I'm going to say that is, we're going to put that on the list of interesting deals. I'm going to add it to our little portfolio there, and we're going to keep track of it because I like biotech, and as a general rule, my only hesitation with biotech stuff is the FDA path is ridiculous and takes many years. And you know, at least in mining, you know that there's results coming. You can hang in on a stock because you know something's coming in the next few weeks. In the FDA side of things, you don't know what's coming. Things could come next week or in 3 years or in 5 years. You could just need a small change to your application and it throws you 2 years back in the line. So that keeps me away from a lot of biotech stuff. Biotech equipment, Braden is pointing out, is a little bit of a different situation. But a lot of the times, you know, you're also proving that sort of stuff can scale. Something that works in a lab in an academic sense may not work in a miniaturized version in a kitchen of a Chipotle or in a food processing warehouse. But if they can use that tech to sit in a bus station and measure the quality of the air for 50,000 square feet, that's pretty legit, I think. And even if there was only that sort of security application for it, I'd be interested at that market cap. The food side of things, I think, is their easy commercialization run. And Braden says, I don't totally believe the FDA just has to accept the results. I don't think the FDA has to just accept the results. I think what they're saying is that the FDA will come around every couple of years and test that machine and make sure it's accurate, which currently is a 10-year lifespan. I would say there's probably some things that a food processor couldn't claim on those results. I don't think that if you're processing lettuce and you run this machine and it goes all clear, that you can necessarily advertise that you're lettuce is 100% healthy and free of all pathogens. I think that would be where the FDA would come in. But to give your own people some peace of mind, to say that we didn't detect any E. coli on this as it goes out the door, or that we did and we can stop it from going out the door rather than having to track it down three days later, I think that's a big deal. So if you're fairly new to the biotech space, stick that in your watch list. I think if it drifts from 70 cents on down to 60 or so, you'd want to be jumping in. If you see it start to making a swing up, that means that there's bigger money coming in than me. And a lot of the time, that to me is the measure. I don't know everything about everything, so if I see on no news that there's volume increasing, that'll generally tell me that someone with a little bit more due diligence than me is maybe jumping in, and I might take a gamble at that point. But I'm going to take a nibble tomorrow. I think this is probably a good price. It's definitely a cheap market cap. If they can move that project forward, if they can, they've only got 37 million shares out, so realistically, if they were to raise 20 million bucks, you're looking at another 30 million shares, which is a decent enough 67 million, keeps it pretty tight and retains some flexibility there to raise more money later if they need to. But it really looks to me like what they're really trying to do is tune this thing up for an exit. And I like the sound of that. You know, the guys that decide that they want to be a rock star, they can't always get there. So this is something that I'm going to happily keep a watch on. And if it has any big moves, we'll let you know.
You've been listening to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.